Research not taken into account, statistics not counted, blame assumed and guilt presumed. Men are not getting a fair shake when it comes to intimate partner abuse. How they experience it, find ways to talk about it, and the results of reporting it are vastly different than women. Some studies clearly show that women can be more violent, and household objects are their weapons of choice.
This podcast contains adult themes, language, and violence. It is not suited to all audiences and may be triggering to some. In many cases, the names and details within these episodes have been changed to protect privacy. Opinions expressed by guests of the show do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast or its producers.
Welcome to Isolated, a podcast about male victims of domestic abuse and control, as well as those suffering as a result of parent alienation syndrome. We are not therapists or experts in this field, but seek to bring these issues to light and provide awareness of early warning signs of abusive behavior and resources for help.
Hello, ISOs. I'm Navi Carpenter.
And I'm Chela. So, there's a bit of cool news.
Do tell.
Since COVID, the state of New Jersey has had telehealth services where you could get access to counselors and therapy via the internet or phone. Well, a new Senate Bill 2559 is awaiting signature by Governor Phil Murphy, which would continue access to mental health treatment through telehealth, in large part because domestic abuse has ramped up exponentially with COVID. Abusers and their victims were in long-term isolation like they've never been before. Mm-hmm. Through telehealth, victims are able to get mental health counseling for their depression, anxiety, and fear, but they're also educated as to their available resources, such as a restraining order, and they're aided in making a safety plan. So the temporary expanded access to care that was in place during the pandemic is now being sought to be permanent.
That would be great. Maybe some good can come from this damn virus.
Yeah. Anything like this helps. If it's going to raise awareness, so be it.
You know, we talked a little bit about the need for services catering to male victims and how those services need to be different. Men and women are not the same animal. Today, we want to talk about that a little bit more in depth. How do men specifically experience, deal, and refer to domestic partner abuse? An article in the Journal of Interpersonal Violence by Brooks, Marty, Broda, and Pordier states that the male response to acts of coercion and their unwillingness to label it as such are, quote, due to the social stereotypes of maleness, strength, domination, aggression, and power, end quote. They studied 20 protection orders and found that men will label a woman as abusive but won't call themselves a victim. When men think of a victim, it's associated with traits like helplessness, femininity, and vulnerability and dependence, traits that men don't usually associate with being male. So they tend not to think of themselves as such. On the flip side, you can see how it would be easier for the woman to claim victimization because victim has those same traits associated with it that are historically more female.
So that can make it harder for men to talk about their abuse because they can't see themselves as victims. But even if they don't label it, men must know that whatever they want to call it totally freaking sucks.
For sure. But if they can't label it, then maybe that adds to the difficulty of making someone else understand what they're going through. I just have to stick in a story about my mom here. She was raised in a religion that didn't allow them to take any medication. Mom had those unfortunate soft enamel teeth that are really cavity susceptible, and she had her fair share of dental visits. But when they drilled her teeth, she wasn't allowed to have any Novocaine.
Oh, you're kidding. Like, there's no way I could sit still and have a drill touch the nerves on my teeth.
I know. I can't even have my teeth cleaned without some numbing stuff. I'm a total wimp. The first time my mom mentioned her dentistry to me, she was saying that she hated that her mom made her take the bus to the dentist alone. And I'm thinking, that doesn't seem so terrible to me. Was the bus full of mean girls or was the driver creepy? No, she just didn't like to be made to go alone. And then it comes out that the no Novocaine and the many cavities, and I was taken aback. I said, that's child abuse, straight up child abuse.
For sure.
And she said, no, it was just our religion and you'll never convince me that that is not abuse. Child or elder or anybody that has to have their teeth drilled with no Novocaine is not at all good.
No. And I mean, that's religion is not an excuse for that.
Yeah. Well, it is for that religion, but she just kind of shrugged it off. She's never been able to label it as abuse. Maybe because in her mind, child abuse is hitting or punching or starving, things like that, that are more readily talked about as abuse. I mean, I never hear this really talked about in the news.
Yeah. Wow. I so clearly would label that as abuse. Not only abuse, but torture. Mm-hmm. I remember some movie with Dustin Hoffman where there was a torture scene, like a Nazi dentist trying to get him to talk.
Yep. Marathon Man. That scene still gives me the heebie-jeebies. In any event, I think that's the kind of thing the article is talking about when they say that if you can't see what's happening to you associated with a certain label, then it's harder to describe and talk about in that way. There were in-depth interviews done with Canadian men aged 19 to 59 and their experiences with whatever label you're sticking on abuse. What emerged were some key themes. You want to talk about those, Chella?
Yeah. The first was fear. Lots and lots of fear. And I would hazard to guess men don't like to label themselves as afraid either. Although there's no way around it when it comes to abuse.
Yeah.
In the interviews, they talked about fear of their partner, fear of leaving, fear of staying, fear of telling someone, and fear of not being believed. Also the fear of having the tables turned and be implicated as the abuser instead.
All valid fears.
Definitely.
Women are more readily believed as victims, and it takes maiming or murder for authorities to look seriously at them as the abuser instead.
Right. Men were way more afraid to defend themselves for that reason. One interviewee named Keith was given 3 cracked ribs by his partner.
Ouch.
He said, quote, "If it was a guy, it's a different situation. You can defend yourself. So I kept on taking these hits." He and the other men were also afraid of having a future relationship. Keith left all his clothes in a duffel bag by the door if a woman came over. He was ready to bolt at any moment. He finally gave up the idea altogether of trying to date. His clothes now peacefully live alone with him and his children, hanging in the closet.
I get it, but it also makes me a little sad. What is it your daughter says? I just love love.
Yeah.
I want Keith to have a real, good, tender, deep, protected love.
Yeah, me too. Another interviewee named Andy said he used to be a good-hearted person. Now he is jumpy, defensive, and cautious and doesn't trust anyone. He flinches if a woman raises her hand, even if it's just to wave at someone. So another theme that came out in the interviews was that more than fear of actual violence, men feared losing their illusion of power and control.
I'm glad you said illusion of control because that's all we have. Patrick McGrath, PhD, stated on Psychology Today, quote, "Control is an illusion. There, I said it. Accept it and move on. You are not in total control of anything at all. You can have some control over some things, but total control is not achievable. Take these examples. You are not in total control of your own mind. If you were, then you would not be thinking of a pink elephant when I tell you not to think of a pink elephant. But I will bet you money that you just thought of one. You are not in total control of the way you feel. If you were, then you could just stop being anxious and stop worrying about everything right now and never be anxious again. So we are not in total control of our own feelings, thoughts, and behaviors. Therefore, there is no way we will be in control of anyone else's thoughts, feelings, and behaviors either. Total control is an illusion," end quote.
And that right there is a very scary thought for men because the thought of not being in control or having power over it is frightening.
Well, it's a scary thought for me too.
Same.
To be honest, I believe God's in control, so I gave up grasping for it a while ago. But not everyone feels that way, and they are hanging on to the illusion for dear life. To have that slip away through an intimate relationship that you started out trusting must be absolutely devastating.
So Daniel and his partner were having an argument, his violent partner, whom he couldn't label as such and couldn't blame because to blame someone else means you don't have control. See how that works?
Mm-hmm.
If you have all the power and control and something bad happens, then guess whose fault it is? Yours, by definition.
Right.
Daniel started staking his claim and yelling back at his partner. "This is my house. He said that his yelling was pushing her buttons and that he pushed too far, and all of a sudden, quote, I was too much in her face. She grabbed whatever she could get her hands on to get me away from her. It happened to be a very large knife. Even when it was happening, I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to die. It was more, what the hell? I need to get that knife.
Jeez.
End quote. It just seems like a rational mind would say, really, the first thing she could grab was a knife.
I know.
You know, to get me away from her. You wouldn't see it as, well, she was defending herself.
Yeah. Daniel was stabbed by his partner and said it was his fault because he yelled. I mean,
yeah.
That's the reverse of the usual perpetrator scenario where the abuser says, look what you made me do. Daniel is saying, look what I made you do.
Yeah.
I made you mad. I made you stab me.
Right. And he was stabbed multiple times, but maintained that he was responsible for her stabbing him because he was yelling at her.
Mm-mm.
Another super interesting theme that came out of those interviews was that there was very little fear expressed verbally, yet they had all taken out restraining orders or protection orders, as they're called in Canada. You don't do that unless you're afraid of someone and want them to stay the hell away from you.
Right.
The article said, quote, there's a unique narrative form which reflects men's disassociation between their identities as men and also as abused persons, end quote.
It's kind of like oil and water. The two just don't mix and therefore must be separate instead of I am a male abused person. So this is a very different kind of thinking within the male brain that must be taken into account when taking statements, offering services, and otherwise catering to men. And also, as friend and family, opening up the conversation, right? You can't just come right out and say, is Lisa Marie abusing you? Men may not adopt that word in relation to themselves or their partner. It's like the story of my mom and the dentist. To her, it wasn't abuse.
Mm-hmm.
She just didn't like it, and it scared her to have to go alone. That became the thing, not that it was abuse. If I asked her, were you abused as a child, she would say no.
Crazy complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
All the men thought they would be judged and ridiculed by family and friends if they talked about what was happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
According to Keith, men's abuse is hidden in the closet. He said, quote, when it comes to being controlled by a woman, it's a hard thing to live with. Also, it's easy to hide. It was easy to cover it. I wouldn't even discuss it with anybody. That's the hardest thing for a man to come forward and say, I was being abused by this woman, end quote.
I am getting more and more understanding about how that must feel.
Yeah. Andy had tears in his eyes when he lifted his shirt to show authorities the wounds inflicted by his wife. He told the police that they could check her out because they would find no wounds on her. He never raised a hand to her. You know how they responded to him? Mm-hmm. The cop said, well, have you raised your voice?
Oh, man. Another one bites the dust. Another cop with discrimination against their own gender. So ingrained is the stereotyping and stigma.
I know. Andy replied, quote, well, yeah, of course I have. In defense, I'm scared. What am I supposed to do? Sit in the corner and take a beating every night? End quote. But he explained that it wasn't like he sat there and he screamed at her on a regular basis. He was calm and tried hard to settle things down.
What universally came out through these interviews was that men desperately want a safe place to talk about these things. They want to break the silence and be able to talk about their experiences without judgment. I think based on what we've learned so far, it's time to take the word victim out of the narrative whenever we can and replace it with target. I do believe these men are targeted as someone a woman can manipulate and coerce because they are good and kind. In fact, there is something called the protective life history factor, which is comprised of 8 predictor variables. Within that, these variables can point to a latent trait that makes one man a better target over another. A man with this latent trait would be described as having a preference for monogamous sexual relationships, a greater willingness to invest time and energy into attracting a partner and maintaining a relationship with them. They lean towards lower risk behaviors, have strong empathy for others' feelings, and exhibit low levels of anger, hostility, and physical and verbal aggression. They want to be a strong, viable presence in the lives of their children, and for that reason prefer to invest in fewer offspring than have a large family. So good, decent, nice men targeted by cunning and manipulative women bent on getting their warped needs met at all costs to the man, the family, and the children.
It's sickening, especially since that protective life history factor latent trait totally describes my husband.
Mine too. And I love and respect him for all of that. There was a study conducted in the Netherlands by Drijber, Rensters, and Keeleen, interviewing 380 males experiencing domestic violence. What they found was that there are signs that women are at least as violent as men, but that they prefer a weapon of assault as opposed to, say, their fists.
Yeah, which bears out with the episodes we've done. Women use like hammers, vacuums, knives.
Right. And women are more likely to assault their target in ways that do not require physical strength, such as psychological abuse, coercive control, and manipulation. So of those 380 males studied in the Netherlands, 46% had said 46% were abused more than 10 times a year, 70% were abused for longer than 1 year, and half of those longer than 5 years. 67% of men were both physically and psychologically abused. 6% were abused by a male ex-partner. In 54% of the men who were physically assaulted, their partners used common household items like knives, pottery, and chairs. It was found that the most common forms of psychological abuse used in the Netherlands were blackmailing, economic abuse, ignoring, bullying, and threatening. They very often used the kids as a bargaining chip, and the men collectively voiced that they felt powerless because they feared losing contact with their children.
After our interview with Kenneth Rosa of the Fathers' Rights Movement in episode 20, I'm even more incensed than I was before about women limiting a good and decent father's time and role with his children, considering all the negative consequences to the child that Kenneth pointed out.
Same. I had no idea about the far-reaching tentacles that would wrap around the child in our society. Only 15% of men studied reported their abuse to police, and less than 32% even mentioned it to police. Their reasons for not doing so were what we have come to expect. 49% feared they would not be taken seriously, 31% felt too much shame, and 35% felt there was nothing the police could do, even if they were believed. And to be fair, 33 of them experienced exactly that. So when you do the math, about 30% of those who actually spoke to police got the negative and traumatizing result of not being believed. Men were also more likely to report being assaulted with a weapon than being psychologically abused.
Which I get, because again, as we've pointed out, you can see a wound or a bruise, but coercive control is a pattern of egregious yet invisible behavior, not an incident of violence leaving a trail of blood.
Right. 62% of men studied did talk with a friend or confidant about what was happening to them. 31% did so because they felt it was someone that would keep their confidence. So ISOs, it's important as support people to be reliable and trustworthy if you want people to look at you as someone they can open up to. 42% only sought help through the internet, feeling that being anonymous was the only way that they were going to admit what was happening to them.
Are we the only ones reading studies like this? It's crazy that with all of this evidence regarding the flip side of the intimate partner abuse coin, that society hasn't offered men the same belief, protection, and the help as women.
I will say that in doing this research, it was quite a rabbit hole going down trying to find what I was looking for. And this report was very obscured, and I believe I even had to pay for it. And it was one of those white papers that was, it's way over my head.
Hard to read.
Hard to understand, yeah.
Right.
Even though healthcare professionals are now more likely to be trained to better screen targets of domestic abuse, that screening uses tools developed for children and females. The focus is women and children, which can create a tunnel vision that disregards males. Screening needs to encompass all people, male, female, gender fluid, etc. And with men, the screening has to look different, as we've noted at the beginning of this episode. Less direct, more broad, open-ended questions work best for men, such as how are things at home? How are the children? If asked directly about abuse, they may not label it as such and thus not respond. Services for men need to address secretiveness, cultural values, masculine identity, tolerance, shame, and loss of face.
Loss of face?
Well, in our culture, we say lose face, but an article in Asian Male Domestic Violence Victims in the Journal of Family Violence says, quote, loss of face is something men avoid at all cost. Face is lost when a man fails to meet the essential requirements placed on the man's position to perform his masculine roles. Spousal conflict in Chinese culture is considered face losing, end quote.
So it sounds like not only do services for men need to be tailored to their gender, but tailored to their culture and race as well.
Or at least considered, right? I mean, yeah. Taken into account. The article stated that there aren't even any readily available statistics regarding Asians and domestic abuse, yet a study in 2000 focused on violence in the family showed that 15% of Vietnamese Americans that responded regularly saw their mother hit their father. Another study of Vietnamese students found 26% claimed that their mothers physically abused their fathers on at least one occasion. The male target of domestic abuse is even more hidden in Asian cultures than in ours. African American men are also more likely to hide their abuse and not report it. One way that has been found to aid Asian men in talking about their abuse, whether it be physical, emotional, or economic, is through storytelling. You know how sometimes it's easier to talk about something in the third person?
Yeah, or the asking for a friend kind of thing, or let me tell you what happened to this person instead of what's happening to me. You know, it can maintain your anonymity and safely probe for what kind of response you might receive if you were to reveal you were actually talking about yourself.
Exactly. So through storytelling, the researchers were able to ascertain that Asian men, quote, disclose feelings of shame, disgrace, emotional loss, and humiliation, any one of which would have prevented them from speaking out. When men are assaulted by their partners, Asian men's unique psychology, personal barriers, and traditional cultural values greatly affect and even jeopardize their help-seeking decision, end quote. But men do need help. Because of their resistance to step forward, there is a definite need to have specialized services designed solely for male victims. And yet a study into those services found that there were thousands of agencies, government and private organizations catering to female victims and their children. Everything from shelters to lawyers to financial assistance. There were zero services exclusively for male targets in Asia, China, India, Japan, or South Korea.
And as we heard from Kenneth Rosa from the Fathers' Rights Movement, only two in the U.S.
Sadly, yes. The U.K. and Canada have a few, but the article states, quote, they are few and far between. An internet search of domestic violence brings up over 1,000 sites for women before any listing for a man, end quote.
I kind of wish they would stop using the term domestic violence and just use domestic abuse. I feel like the word violence excludes the other forms of abuse that so many targets say are actually even worse, like the emotional abuse, the coercive control, economic abuse, sleep deprivation, all of which go hand in hand. I don't want the fact that those may not be seen as violent to minimize their completely destructive effect.
I totally get what you're saying. Even after all this time, I strongly associate the word violent with some act of bloodshed. Crash, boom, pow. It just doesn't seem like the two words are interchangeable, violence and abuse. Violence defined is, quote, behavior involving physical force intended to hurt, damage, or kill, but also an unpleasant or destructive natural force, end quote, such as a violent storm. A definition of violence according to the law is, quote, the unlawful exercise of physical force or intimidation by the exhibition of such force, end quote.
Again, I feel like violence is focused on an incident, whereas coercive control involves a pattern of abuse, you know, including intimidation, manipulation, blackmail, financial ruin, and battery. It's all encompassing and it's all abuse.
I totally agree. James left a comment on our Facebook page and said, quote, I've been there and have disgusting scars to show for it. The worst was the manipulation because she knew what I'd been through. I'd never hit a woman. She thought just because I'd never hit back made me an easy target. It's horrific. Anyone who feels like that, please get help. Life is easier when you're free. End quote. The community organization Stop Segregation of Men pointed us to a 2020 article about the seven myths of domestic violence in Western countries by Christy Tetrault of NUI Galway. Let me try and break this down Crayola style. So the heterosexual pattern of abuse is 50% bidirectional, meaning both men and women abuse each other in equal frequency and severity. 35% is female unidirectional, meaning women perpetrate abuse against their male partners more often and with more severe violence. 15% is male unidirectional. The article stated, quote, same-sex couples experience similar rates of violence, but lesbians experience more partner violence than women in heterosexual relationships. Along the bidirectional rates, this shows that the gender paradigm, men perpetrate violence to retain patriarchy and women only hit in self-defense, is simply not evidence-based, end quote. In fact, the more empowerment and equality women have in any given society directly correlates to the higher level of unidirectional violence they inflict. Even with 50% of women and men in intimate partner relationships abusing each other rather equally, if a woman reports to police, the male is perceived as the perpetrator. Tetrault went so far as to say that, quote, male victims are not recorded in shelter data because no one is even looking for male victims. If men aren't seen as potential victims, how can they be counted? This is why researchers prefer to use scales like the Conflict Tactics Scale 2. This is 16 times more sensitive than police reports in detecting all forms of partner violence, end quote.
I've never heard of that.
Me neither. But here, why don't you read this description of it? Because it seems like it would be a good tool for abuse screening by organizations for men and for women.
The revised conflict tactics scale says it, quote, measures both the extent to which partners in a dating, cohabitating, or marital relationship engage in psychological and physical attacks on each other, and also their use of reasoning or negotiation to deal with the conflicts, end quote. It appears to be a series of 78 questions designed to ascertain prevalence and severity levels of physical assault, psychological aggression, negotiation, injury, and sexual coercion.
In giving this questionnaire to 317 participants, the prevalence factor showed that 47% of men and 35% of women had been physically assaulted by their partner at least once in the preceding year. The study stated, quote, the high rates of physical assault by women as well as men will be surprising to some readers, but they are consistent with findings from over 30 previous studies, end quote. And we will put a link to this and all this other material in our show notes if you want to research further. The CTS2 scale is designed to be read at a sixth grade level and has been found to be usable with many cultural groups. The questions are paired, I would say. For example, question 61, I burned or scalded my partner on purpose. Then you would pick a prevalence factor on the scale for that statement. Question 62 is then, my partner did this to me. Again, picking a prevalence on the scale. So it shows both sides of the partnership, what I do and what is done to me.
God, we've covered quite a few perpetrators who burn and scald, but it still shocks me that the question is in the CTS2.
It's a new question since the CTS1 was first created, I believe. And do you know what the prevalence of partners burning each other is?
Do I want to know?
39%. Oh, yes. If I'm reading that result correctly, or 0.39, that's 4%, or 0.04. More than the prevalence of accusing your partner of being a lousy lover.
Jeez.
It was a very technical article that was way over my head again, but hopefully I got it relatively straight. I know this has been an episode full of stats, but we felt it was important to talk about how different it is for men to experience, report, and discuss their abuse, and how screening designed for women and children may not work for them. It wouldn't even get to the truth. So as always, we pray for your health and healing. And until next time, please be safe, be smart, and survive.
If you or someone you love is being abused by an intimate partner, we have resources listed on our website at isolatedpodcast.com. If you have an experience, expertise, or advice you'd like to share, please send an email to notalone@isolatedpodcast.com or visit our website. Your privacy, should you desire it, is a top priority for us. You can support the work of this podcast and help fund much-needed therapy for men who can't afford it by becoming a member through our Patreon page at patreon.com/isolatedpodcast, which also gets you perks and benefits unavailable to non-members. You can cancel at any time. Your 5-star review on iTunes will also help promote the show and help listeners find the podcast. Thank you so much for your support.